Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to Beauty Talk. I'm your host, Janice Tennell, for today, Sunday, January 10th. Happy New Year to those who have not tuned in since the beginning of the year. Thank you for listening tonight. For those who are listening by playback, thank you again for your continued support. I have an exciting show planned for tonight. It's a topic that someone asked me recently to do a Periscope about. And I will do a Periscope at some point about this, but I wanted to talk tonight a little more in detail and give you a chance to ask questions and that kind of thing. So we're going to jump right into it, but first we have some beauty news. And before the beauty news, let me just remind you guys that the call-in number for tonight is 914-803-4399. Again, that's 914-803-4399. So if you have a comment or if you have a question, please call us at that number. Make sure you press the options to speak with the host so that we know that you want to speak instead of just having you sitting on the line. So I'm going to turn it over to Denise, who has something she wants to share.
Good evening, everyone. And again, Happy New Year for those of us just joining us. This year, I wanted to make an announcement about a professional makeup artist conference coming to the Atlanta, Georgia area. For those of you in Atlanta, you should be familiar with, and if you're not, I will introduce you to the Professional Makeup Artist Conference Expo, which is PMAC Expo. It takes place April 2nd through April 3rd of this year. And again, PMAC is a professional makeup artist conference and expo. It's for film and television, body art, fantasy, special effects, fashion, and more. You can go to pmacexpo.com for more information. That's PMACEXPO.com. This expo is open to the general public. Okay, and it says purchase cutting edge and exclusive makeup supplies and products. Again, it's April 2nd through 3rd, 2016. The location of the expo this year is 200 Peachtree Street, Atlanta, Georgia, 30303. So I'm not exactly sure what type of venue that is. But again, it's 200 Peachtree Street, Atlanta, Georgia. And for more information, you can go to pmacexpo.com, P-M-A-C-E-X-P-O.com. And let me just make a comment briefly about this whole open to the general public. We kind of touched on it a little bit last week with Michael Key and with his expo being open to the public, and then he has special show hours for professionals alone. There is absolutely nothing wrong with a makeup trade show that's open to the public. There are people who will attend these shows who think that they may be interested in a career in makeup, who may want to just get a feel for, you know, what's out there in the makeup industry. So how else will they be allowed to experience that if they're not allowed into some of these expos? Because I hate to hear people say all the time, well, such and such show is, you know, it's for professionals only. And I just think that's such a lie. I don't think there's any show out there that takes place in the United States that's for professionals only. I think these some of these shows can claim that they're for professionals only, but I've attended all of them, and not one is for professionals only. They're all open to the general public in some form or fashion. If they weren't, then they wouldn't make money as a trade show. That's it.
Okay. I had some beauty news I wanted to share tonight, which is very similar. Exactly what we're talking about, actually. And that is that the Erica Carr Classes presents the union webinar, and it's going to take place on January 25th from 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, it's presented by Erica Carr Makeup and Hair, and the investment is $95. The union webinar, you're going to watch industry pros such as Kimberly Jones, who's in Atlanta with us, Jessica Padilla, Craig Lindberg, and Chris Malone. And they will break down the mystery, I can't even read my own handwriting, the mystery behind the union, particularly IIC 798, which is the International Alliance of Theatrical and Stage Employees, Local 798. And you will learn all facets of what it takes to join this well-respected workforce and the incredible benefits that go along with it. So, again, that date is January 25th from 5 to 8 p.m. They will go into detail about certain aspects of joining the union, and we're going to pretty much be very general tonight. And there may be some things that we go in detail about, but they're going to go into detail about some other things. So basically, you should actually, if you're available, to take that class. That would be a great class to take because it'll be kind of an extension of what we're going to do tonight. Okay. So, again, the investment is $95, January 25th from 5 to 8 p.m. Check out Erica's website. You know, if you need more information, you can follow her on Facebook as well, where you can get more information as well on her pages there as well. Okay? So tonight's topic is about the Hair and Makeup Artists Union. You may hear people often say, we kind of talk about it by number, by the local that we belong to. But it's IATSE, which is International Alliance for Theatrical and Stage Employees. That's IATSE. There are locals here in the United States, several locals actually, but hair and makeup only are 706 Los Angeles County. That's the West Coast. And then on the East Coast, Local 798, which represents up and down the East Coast as far as Maine. And you can correct me if I say anything wrong, but as far as Maine, it goes all the way down to Florida as well as Louisiana. And then you have Toronto, which is 873, mm-hmm. Local 873. And you have Vancouver, Hollywood North, as they like to call it, which is Local 891. Okay. I am going to talk about four locals. So I'm going to give basic information that applies to here in the United States, and then I'm going to give, you know, some basic information that applies to the two Canada locals. But it's all going to be general information. So if you live in Vancouver, if you live in Toronto, basically going to give you enough to get started. Same thing here in the United States, telling you what you need to do, how to qualify, and that whole process, okay? So basically the first thing I want everybody to know basically is, you know, the question that people don't ask actually is, and that is, what is a union or what is the union?
Right.
People
right.
never ask that. They just say, and for some people, I think they just hear the word and they want to be a part of it because they know that they get the opportunity to work on film and television. Some people see that, you know, when you work on movies, you work with a lot of celebrities, and so I want to be a part of that. And I actually think the class that Erica Carr is giving, I think that they're going to touch on that, on working, you know, like working with high-profile clients,
mm-hmm.
which I think is a great thing to do, but a great thing to talk about in the class. But what is a union? So the union, by my definition, is a workforce or an organization that is made up of workers, and this union, the union is not like a, it's not an agency or anything like that. The union does not get you jobs, okay? But it's a combined organization of workers, and the union is brought together to protect our common interests, the common interests of the workers, and also our working conditions. So basically, we are the union, okay? So it's just a freelance workforce. And they help negotiate, a union, you know, will help negotiate for us. They negotiate with employers, and in our case, the college and the film, it's basically, you know, the studio. They negotiate contracts with the studios, so that way when you go to work, and you want to know how much you're going to make on this particular job and what you're supposed to have and what you're supposed to get from that particular employer, it's all in the contract that the union negotiated with that particular employer. So basically, that's what the union is. That's what they do. And they you might get more explanation, again, like I said, in Erica's class. But that's pretty much the basic idea behind the union. Don't realize to work on feature films and television, you must be part of the union. Okay, so for those who are working on photo shoots and you're working at the department store at a particular makeup counter, that's great experience, but that's not experience that's going to qualify you to be in the union. So what you need to be working on is films, television, commercial, video, theater, those type of jobs are what you need. Some may say, well, how do you get jobs to qualify you?
Especially when you're in a union state where, you
right.
know, you can't be non-union on a union show. People always think it's really hard to get into the union,
right.
and it is hard. And I say it should be hard. And the reason I say that is because by the time you actually get your days to get into the union, you would have had enough experience. At least I would hope. Enough experience to say, I get this. I really understand this. I know, you know, the purpose of me doing these days and why I had to do them, because there's tons of stuff that you have to learn just to say that you know the basics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then so when you're in a union state, you know, I guess my best advice would be to try to get the, you know, the short film projects, try to get the independent film projects, you know, working on those things, any type of like music videos that are not union, you know, try to get on those types of jobs if they're, you know, different like corporate video jobs. Of course, those aren't union, but, you know, you have corporate, different corporations that shoot videos for their businesses. You know, whether it be Coca-Cola, Home Depot, things like that. Try to get those jobs. Try to get jobs at television news stations, you know, CNN, things like that. All of those types of things will give you days to get into the union. And those are especially good opportunities if you live in a union state, such as Maryland.
Right.
You know?
Well, you know, I remember hearing years ago people talking about, like, you just mentioned corporate video. So, you know, they're saying, well, the union was not looking for that. Well, that's up to the union to decide if they're looking for
Absolutely.
That or not.
Absolutely.
But I'll tell you this, the more corporate video jobs that you have on your resume or jobs similar to that will look very attractive to somebody who's maybe doing a commercial and looking for a makeup artist. You know what I mean?
And so, yeah, exactly. And not just that, if you're doing a corporate video, you don't know who you will meet on that job that could kind of, you know, you're setting yourself up to get the next thing. So you don't know who you could meet who would possibly know someone who does, you know, music videos or, you know what I'm saying, something like that. Like, don't think of every situation, every work opportunity as, God, this has got to be for my union days. You can't think of it like that. Every work opportunity should be, you know, one little stepping stone into getting you to where you want to be. So
right.
many people are so focused and so they have their minds so wrapped around getting these union days to get into the union that they're forgetting about the whole process and what they're supposed to be learning along the way. They're forgetting about the whole journey into this thing. You know, you're supposed
right.
to get something out of that journey. There's something that you're supposed to learn as you're trying to get these days, but they're so focused on getting the days so that they can get in, and they're missing the big
right.
picture. They're
exactly.
missing the big picture. You're so focused on getting the days that you don't even know what a day on a film set is like.
Right.
You want to work on movies, but yet you've never worked on a movie.
So
there are tons of things that you can, you know, also do. It's like, what do you call them? Web series. Web series is another category that has opened up to the union.
Yeah, that's very new within like the last few years.
And so people are doing web series and getting their days that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's important for people to know that when you work on these projects, you must be paid at least $50 a day in order for that day to qualify.
Right. So let's go back a little bit real quick since you said that. Okay, so basically I told you what types of jobs you needed to have, okay? Like she said, mm-hmm. once you get these jobs, you really need to be getting paid at least $50. And if, you know, if you're not working on a project that where your payment is coming through a payroll company,
mm-hmm.
then you need to at least make sure that the check is coming from the production John Jones, the producer, okay? It really needs to be a check that's coming from, you know, ABC Films versus the producer's personal account. So just try to pay attention to that kind of stuff because, and the union understands, you know, like independent projects and, you know, the producers writing the checks and things like that. They understand that and they get that, but it's up to you to make sure you go to the producer or whoever it is that you need to go to, like on an independent project, and make sure that your payment is coming from, you know, the production business account. So That's something that you should make sure that you do, and you should make sure that you keep copies of, make sure that you're recording your days. Keep your check stubs, like she said, $50 or more for payment. And so that way when you qualify and you get all your days, you're going to be asked to show your proof. Okay, so that's going to be part of your proof. Now I'm going to speak about Local 706 out of Los Angeles County and 798 out of New York. Okay, and 798 is representing the East Coast. And let me just tell you the states really quickly, because I know I said from Maine down to, but I'm just going to read it out to you so that you'll know for sure, okay? So Connecticut, this is Local 798 out of New York. They represent workers in Connecticut, Delaware, D.C., Florida, Georgia, Louisiana, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, Mississippi, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New York, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, South Carolina, Tennessee, Vermont, Virginia, and West Virginia. Okay? Now, Louisiana, Kentucky, Minneapolis, and Minneapolis are included in our jurisdiction, but they're included under the actual collective bargaining agreement. Okay? And then, you know, you have towns like Chicago or places like that.
I think Nashville,
exactly. A lot of those artists are working under, well, no, Nashville is where they're working, but they're not part of our jurisdiction. And they're coming, well, like Detroit, Chicago, and they're working under locals in those areas that represent other crew members.
Right. Well, you know, Nashville is under our jurisdiction now, but some years ago and not very long ago, they weren't.
Right. They're fairly new to our jurisdiction. But some of those towns like that, they're working, their makeup artists and hairstylists working under locals that represent other crew members. And that's something a little different, but it's still the union. But that's something specific for just that town alone. Those states that I just read off allow someone who's in Local 798 to work in all of those states.
Right.
So, you can work from Maine all the way down to Florida, Louisiana, you know, so on and so forth. But, and like I was talking about L.A. County, you have to live or reside in Los Angeles County. So if you live in San Diego and you want to be a part of, to either move to Los Angeles, you need to move to Los Angeles. You need to have a residence in Los Angeles and be able to work in Los Angeles. So I'm just trying to let everybody know, it's like, just because I said it's out in, on the West Coast, it doesn't represent the entire West Coast.
Oh, exactly. That's a good point. That's a good point.
All right, starting with Local 706 in L.A. County, I just wanted to know who live out there, how qualify to get in. We have already said that, you know, what types of jobs you have to have. And if there's anybody out there who's in 706 that's listening, if you hear me say something that doesn't sound right or sound wrong, please call in and correct me. Make sure you correct me. I have no problem with correction. There's a 60-60-60 rule. That's one way of qualifying. And then there's your off-roster. They can hire off-roster. And I'm not going to get into that. I'm just going to stay with the 60-60-60. Those are 60 days. 60-60-60. Basically, you need 180 days. And so the 60-60-60 represents 3 years. just like out of New York, 80 days within a three-year period, and you have 5 years to do it. But it has to be three consecutive years. So I always like to give the example. So if you do it in year one, two, you could do it in year one, two, and three, or you could do it in year two, three, and four, years three, four, and five, but it has to be three consecutive years within a five-year period. So if you get, I don't know, like let's say if you get, you have 100 days and you got that like in year one and two, and you still need 80 more days, but you don't get 80 more days until year five. That's not going to work. Okay, so keep that in mind. I know a lot of people who say, well, you know, I have enough days to get in the union, but their days like, you know, maybe 6 years ago. That's not going to work either. Okay, so everything has to be
right.
Done. That's one thing you have to remember. It has to be done. And it has to be done within a certain time frame. Let's see. Oh, okay. There's a note that I wanted to add when I was talking about 706 and I was saying 6066. You have... when you do the 60-60-60 of non-roster work, non-union work, in each of those 3 years, it starts from the first day of hire. You know what I mean? That's when you start counting.
Right.
I just wanted to make sure people... we're aware of that. It starts from the first day you're hired. Again, that's network broadcasting TV, commercial, legitimate theater. I love that, legitimate theater. It has to be legitimate theater.
Right.
You know, like Broadway, something like that. That's legitimate theater.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. I mean, I don't know, exactly know if you would know this for sure, but what if, you know, Tyler Perry does a lot of plays? Is that legitimate theater or no?
I can't speak on that, but I would assume no. But that's something to talk about.
I mean, because people are going to definitely ask the question.
Going now.
People are definitely going to ask the question if that's legitimate theater. If there's somebody out there listening to the show, if you know the answer to that, please do let us know because people are going to be curious about that.
Now, I would assume they're referring to Broadway shows. I mean, there are Broadway shows that travel. So you may... you know, get a show to travel to your state, or you may go out of state to do the work in a particular jurisdiction of a certain local, like Local 798. So that's a legitimate question, I think. One thing I wanted to go through and list was some of the non-union states so that people are aware of the states that they live in, if they're union states or if they're non-union states. Now, I think the advantage to living in a non-union state is non-union states are right-to-work states, okay? And we'll talk a little bit about what a right-to-work state is. But let me list the non-union states. You have Alabama, Arizona, Kansas, Florida, Georgia, Idaho, Indiana, Louisiana, Michigan, Mississippi, Nebraska, Nevada, North Carolina, North Dakota, Oklahoma, South Carolina, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Virginia, Wisconsin, and Wyoming. Those are all the right-to-work states or non-union states. And I'm going to list this on the Beauty Talk Online Radio Facebook page. And I'll try to get some of these out in a couple of tweets on Twitter, on the tweet chat. But those are all the non-union states, okay? So those are states that say that you don't necessarily have to be in a union to work on a union show. Let me not phrase it that way. Basically, what a right-to-work state is, if a union project came to your state and you were hired to work on it, basically, the way it works is most people who are in the union try to hire union simply because their brothers and sisters pay dues every day that they work. They pay dues quarterly, and, you know, they pay the initiation dues once they get in. At least this is on 798 side. I know on 706 side out in L.A., their dues are a little different. I think they pay a certain amount up front or something like that. It's a little different the way their dues work.
And let me say this really quickly before you finish. Union members are held at a high regard. And why? You know, basically because if you, I know at least back in the day, if you were a member of a union, then you worked really hard to get there and you learned what you needed to learn to do the work that's required of a union artist. So it's a certain caliber of artist. And so that's another reason why a lot of people try to hire union, even if they are in a non-union state. You know, you want to exhaust that union list first anyway.
Right. It's just basically a respect for one another, for your union brothers and sisters. I mean, we paid dues to get into this union, okay? We worked hard and worked our days to get into this union. We have experience. It's not saying that a non-union worker can't do the work or whatever, but it's the simple fact that this other person who's in the union right along with me on the same roster as me could be possibly sitting home, but yet they still have to pay quarterly dues. You know what I'm saying? Or they're still trying to pay their, their initiation dues or something, but yet they can't get work because a non-union person is working. Again, it could be that this non-union person has the experience that the makeup department head is looking for that maybe this union worker doesn't have. That could be the case. So I'm not just saying, you know, we just can't hire non-union people. I'm not saying that at all. But let me get back to what I was talking about. I was talking about a right-to-work state, which are the non-union states. And basically, the right-to-work law secures the right of employees to decide for themselves whether or not to join or financially support a union. So basically what it means is this. If you're a non-union worker, let's say in the state of Georgia, okay, and you get on one of the productions going on here, and let's say you get enough days to join the union. So the job is already union, okay? All you need to join the union is to have 30 consecutive days, pretty much, on this job. When you get those days, you'll get a letter from the union stating that you could join the union, whatever. Your right as an employee of this job, your right as a citizen of the state of Georgia is that you do not have to join the union just because you're qualified to join the union. The union can't force you to join the union. The union can't force you to pay dues. There are some people out there who want to be in the union, who are non-union, and who've been getting a lot of work on union shows, who, out of respect for the union that they're trying to get into, will send in dues just because they want to be a member and they're showing in good faith that I'm not just working on this union job where I know a union member could be working, but I've been hired to work on this show, but I'm also going to pay you dues because I know, you know, you could be getting dues from your union members. So there are tons of people who do that, and that's because they want to get in. They're trying to get in, and that's just their way of saying, hey, look, I'm trying to get in. I'm going to go ahead and pay dues anyway. Because the thing about this, for those people who work on union shows, the production still pays into a pension fund for you. So there are tons of people who are not in the union, but they're constantly getting mail from the benefits department saying that this is the amount of money that you have in your pension and welfare account. Mm-hmm. You know, they constantly get mail that says, you can get insurance. Because the thing is this, by law, if you work on a union show, you must receive the same benefits and the same, you know, your same rate as a union member. So imagine how this must make a union member feel when you're receiving the same benefits, the same pay, but yet you're not paying dues. And that's the reason why, again, like I said, those people who are out there, they're non-union, but they're working on these union shows in these right-to-work states, just out of respect for members, they want to do that. So that the members are looking at them like, okay, so they're paying dues. You know, they understand that, you know, they're getting the same things we're getting and they don't have to pay anything for it. So yet they're paying dues. So that's just out of respect for the union members. And like I said, and again, because they want to get in, so they figure I'll go ahead and just pay these dues. And it's kind of smart because it could be used against your initial dues for getting in. That money could go towards that. So that's kind of smart on their part. But basically, again, a right to work just simply means that you have the right not to join the union once you qualify to join. You have the right not to. So it's saying you can continue to work on this union show without being a union member. Mm-hmm. Like it or not, that's what right to work is. So if your state was not listed, then it's obvious that your state is a union state, such as Alaska, Hawaii, California, Oregon, Washington, Montana, Colorado, New Mexico, Minnesota, Missouri, Illinois, Kentucky, Ohio, West Virginia, Maryland, Delaware, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, New York, Vermont, Maine, New Hampshire, am I missing this? Rhode Island and Connecticut. They're all union states.
And I just want to say, because I didn't mention this earlier when I was talking about what a union is and that kind of thing, I just want you all to know, and every local, you know, may differ in this.
And Massachusetts, I'm sorry, I forgot one, Massachusetts.
But for the most part, you know, you receive benefits from being in the union, and not just the union, you know, work negotiating contracts and making sure that your working conditions, you know, are right and that you're being paid fairly, paid with the contract, that kind of thing. But, you know, there are health benefits, retirement plan, financial assistance, you know, different types of discounts and promotions. For some, there are even scholarships. But then also, especially now after, I don't know, who was that, maybe 2 years ago, things that happened in Georgia, but there's also now work safe support, making sure that the union members are safe. And if you feel like there is something that, you know, part of your job is putting you in danger in some kind of way, you know, there are some, so that we don't have to be uncomfortable with saying, no, I'm not going to do that, you know, that type of thing. So a lot of the locals offer different things, such as the things I just listed. And like I said, they may vary in one way or another. You know, every local health benefits are not the same. And so there, I'm sure there are differences, you know, with financial assistance and retirement plans and that kind of thing. But I wanted to also briefly speak about the locals in Toronto and in Vancouver. So for those who may be listening to, you know, qualifying. And we'll start off with Toronto. The first thing that you have to do is you have to apply for permit status. And that is, permit status is working toward becoming a member. So, for instance, like we were just talking about LA and New York, when you're working toward becoming a member, you're just trying to get your days. You're not, you don't have a certain status. You're just, well, I mean, if you want to call it a status, you're non-union. But permit status provides support and backup to the membership. So to me, this is kind of like when you were talking a little earlier, you were talking about, you know, like if you live in a union state and how are you going to get jobs if you live in a,
right.
in a union state? Well, to me, this kind of answers that. Well, they probably don't ask that question in Toronto, but this kind of takes care of that in a way. It's like when you once you apply for permit status, put on a list, and you're going to back up, you're going to support and back up those who are in the union, but only during busy periods. So it's not a situation where, like, okay, someone from the union calls and says, hey, we need, you know, somebody to come in to work today. No, they're going to use all the union members. And when it's busy, then they will call the support, which is those who have a permit. If you belong to another union, you still have to apply for a permit. So me belonging to Local 798 out of New York, if I wanted to go to Toronto to work, I would still have to apply for a permit. You know, and then you would submit your application online. But if you already have a permit, you know, once you have a permit and you do what, you, what needs to be done, then you can apply for membership. Okay. Oh, and then there's also, for instance, we were talking about hairstylist and makeup artist. In 798, you have to have a cosmetology license. So
yes. Is that just for, that's hairstylist, right?
Yes.
Okay.
For hairstylist, you have to have a cosmetology license. Okay. Or, and, you know, and then, if I'm not mistaken, and let me just briefly look at my notes to see if I had anything about that. No, I didn't have anything down for that for 706. But if I remember correctly, for hairstyles and cosmetology license, and on the East Coast, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe for makeup artists, are they requiring you to have an aesthetics license?
I don't ever remember being required to have an aesthetics license or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, let me put it this way. When we got in, I don't remember that. But now I'm not exactly.
I remember
you
that.
You remember
back
that?
When we got in.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I didn't remember that. But like I said,
I
don't know what they're.
For some reason, I don't believe that's a requirement now. I'm not sure.
Well, it should be.
There should be some.
You should have some type of license, whether it be a nail license, aesthetic license, you know, if you're doing, definitely if you're doing hair, cosmetology license, because I just think it's important that you understand sanitation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I really do think that's important on all levels. But one thing I just kind of want to address, and it's based off of just some things I've been working on this past week or so. This independent film, and I always say, you know, I'm not going to do these things anymore, but every time somebody asks me, oh, can you do me a favor, you know, whether it be an actress, a director, or whatever, I always say yes. Always say yes without even thinking. I just say yes. And I get on these jobs, and I'm like, okay, why am I here? Why am I doing this? And you really have to ask yourself, and you really have to be in tune with yourself and knowing what's for you and what's not for you. And I'm not saying that this job was not for me, but I just wanted to bring up a few points about once you get into the union, okay, there's certain things that are so important before you even pick up a brush or pick up a sponge. You have to understand that it's just not about the makeup. If you don't know proper set etiquette, I'm just going to go out and say you'll never work. Because there are so many people doing so many dumb things on set. Number one would have to be safety. You mentioned safety earlier. And part of safety is not just, oh, don't touch this, oh, don't touch that, don't lean up against this, don't walk under a ladder, don't walk under a, you know, that's just not the only part of safety. Safety can also come down to something as simple as the pair of shoes that you're wearing. There should be no open-toe shoes on set at any time, ever. I don't care if it's 120 degrees outside. You should not be wearing open-toe shoes, ever. And then just going back to simple set etiquette, people have to know when to speak and when not to speak, who to speak to and who not to speak to, and when to speak to them. So many people sometimes, I think, are wanting to be on set for the wrong reasons. If you're a department head or the key makeup artist, and that's another thing, in the union, you know, a lot of people just working in general freelance, when they hear key, they think, okay, that's the top. You're at the top if you're the key. Well, in film and TV, department head is the top position. That's the head of the makeup department or the hair department, okay? And then next to the department head is the key. And then from there, it goes down to some places will classify it simply as just makeup, or they may classify it as third makeup. But basically, the person in that third position on down, they're all classified as just simply makeup. But if your department head tells you to do something, then you should do it. As simple as that. Don't have your own agenda. You do what the department head asks you to do. Your behavior, you shouldn't be, you know, goofing off, playing around. You know, I've seen people throughout the years to just simply, like, in Video Village where you have the monitors where your directors and your producers all sit to watch what's going on, you have some of your department heads, whether it be your gaffer, your key grip, your hair and makeup department heads. And sometimes hair and makeup, the whole team will sit in Video Village. That's not the place to goof off. Neither is that the place to stare at your cell phone the whole time. If you're going to be behind the monitor, then look at the monitor. That's one thing I cannot stand, someone who constantly has their head down in their cell phone the whole time. It's like you're not paying attention to what's on camera if you're looking at your cell phone. And I do understand people have children. I understand that. You know, people may have important messages coming through. People may even have opportunities to work coming through email on their phone. I get that. But to stare at your phone all day, if you got to stare at your phone all day, then I don't think you need to be on set working. But I've seen people, I mean, the behavior has just been unreal. I've seen so much, and it's just ridiculous. But if your department head or your key artist asks you to go to set, to cover set, then go. Don't take 20 minutes getting there. Go. When they ask you to go, pack your stuff up and go. As a matter of fact, as soon as you've finished doing makeup and you know you're finished doing makeup, pack your stuff up right away. So when they ask you to go, all you have to do is pick up your bags and go. So many people are just really on their own agenda. They take their sweet time getting there. They, you know, I see people, they go to set and they talk to everybody on the crew. And I'm not saying you can't talk to people, but what I'm saying is there's no need to be that overly friendly as soon as you get to set for the first time. Every new makeup artist and hairstylist needs the Sean Hatcher's book. I really do. I really do. And if nothing else, you definitely need it for film and television. Definitely. It will save you a lot of embarrassment. It will even get you work opportunities in the future if you know what to do and what not to do on set.
Absolutely. And I kind of want to talk about, you know, once you get in the union. But before I do, I want to go back because I didn't get a chance to mention for those people who are living in Vancouver, some of the requirements. And again, we're being very general tonight. It's just enough information to get you started. You can go out and do more research on your own. I'll be doing a couple of Periscopes, giving some detailed information about different things about the union. So catch me either Monday or Tuesday, and I'll be posting so that you guys can follow. But and this is Janice. Let me know. But for those who are in Vancouver, and I didn't mention this for Toronto or anywhere else because, to the best of my knowledge, there are no application fees. But in Vancouver, there is a $100 application process fee. Very much like Toronto, you must apply for a permit. Okay. And in Vancouver, if members are not available, then a permittee may be offered work. So it's not really about a busy season or anything like that. It's more so just like in L.A. or New York, if a union member is not available, then they'll go off roster and call you. A permittee does not pay annual dues. You do not have to, you also don't have access to full benefits like a union member. However, they will pay working dues. So that means every day that you work, you'll pay a certain percentage for that work day. Okay, and that's the same thing in 798. And there will be a local 891 representative who will represent you as a bargaining agent. So you will have that. If you belong to another IIC local, like I was mentioning earlier for Toronto, if you belong to another IIC local, you can apply for sister local status. Okay, and I'm not sharing like all the details as to, you know, what that is, how you go about that. That's just general information. Once you get 60 working days under an IIC 891 agreement within one department. So, for instance, if you are someone who does hair and makeup, you have to get your 60 days in one department. Let's just use makeup artist. So you have to get 60 days working as a makeup artist. Once you get those 60 days as a permittee, then you can apply for membership. Okay. Now, Toronto didn't mention anything like that. I spoke with them. So I'm not sure how that works for Toronto. But in Vancouver, you have to have 60 working days in one department and then you can apply for membership. Then they have what is called a second category status. Okay, so you have to be a member in good standing, and then you can apply for a second category status. Now, it could be hair, it could be grip, it could be any department. Your second category. There's no limits to how many categories you can apply for, but you have to be in good standing, already a member in good standing, and then you can apply for a second category. And it may be, I can't remember if there's a certain number of days that you have to have before you apply for your second category. I'm not sure, but you just have to be a member in good standing first. Then also you can apply as prime status. You can apply for prime status in another category after 60 days worked in your second category. So all of this requires you to be a member in good standing. Okay, you got that down. Let's say you apply for a second category. In another category, after working 60 days in your second category. And I don't know the reason why they allow you to be able to work in all these categories, but I feel like once you become a member in Vancouver, you're pretty set. You know, if you get all these different category statuses, I believe you would be guaranteed to probably work at least in one of those categories. They require you, sorry, this is 798. Let me go back. Remember we were talking about 798 and the licenses? For 798 hair, you're required to have a cosmetology license. So for those who are out there who are barbers, if you are a barber with a barber's license, you need a cosmetology license. So you need to go back to get those hours to get a cosmetology license. If you are a barber and you have a cosmetology, then you're good. You're good. If you have a natural hair license, that does not work. Okay, so that does not replace a cosmetology license. So 798 hair, you have to have a cosmetology license. For makeup, you have to have a school diploma or certificate of completion for a makeup school, an art school, et cetera. Sure, you have the proper licenses. And if you have more questions or if you have any doubts, if I haven't explained it enough, you guys are always welcome to call the actual locals yourself, and they will explain to you what you need to get in, when they are accepting. I don't know about 706 for Vancouver or Toronto, but I do know in 798 there's a certain period of time when they accept applicants. Something that you may want to check with all the locals. You know, when do you accept applicants? Some of them may say, you know, all the time. Some of them may have a certain time of the year when they do. So just make sure you know, one, what's required, and two, when they accept applicants, and three, once they accept you, how much you're required to pay. Because there are fees in 706 and 798 once you get in. In Toronto and Vancouver, I don't remember, but I will when I get on Periscope, I will make sure that I have that information. But once you get in, you are required to pay. In 798, it's like either 3,000 or 3,500. I can't remember which one. And then the note was 3,000. 35. Okay, yeah, because it was 3,000 back in 2002. When I joined. Back then, they let you pay half when you got in. The other half, you had to pay within a certain period of time. Now, you have to pay the entire $3,500 up front. Put on a what do they call it? Like an entry, what is it like? What do they call it now when you join? Because you know you have your journeymen,
right?
But back in the day, you had to have you had to take a test to become a journeyman. Now both 706 and 798 have gotten rid of those tests, and I'm not sure what 706 is doing for their journeyman status, but for 798. You are maybe.
I think they
class,
just call it
like
an associate makeup or associate hair or something.
Yeah,
like
that. That's what it is. Yeah, I couldn't remember the actual title, but now you have an associate title when you come in. So like associate makeup or hair and journeyman makeup and hair for 798. So things have changed as far as that journeyman testing and that kind of thing, but. Everything's still, it's still the same, you know, what you need to know. And I'm going to talk about what you need to know as far as makeup and hair for the union as far as the creative part, you know, not just getting in, but what types of makeup and what types of get in the union. They pay their money. Some of them say, no, what now? And, or they get upset because they're not getting work. Well, like I said in the very beginning of the show, the union is not an agency. You know, they don't get you work. So don't expect the union to get you work. Don't expect the union to do that for you. So what you need to know is once you get in, and especially if you're in a right-to-work state, if you have the opportunity to get on a union project, they'll remember you, you know, and they can, once you get in the union, you just let them know that you're in, and, you know, when they need additional help, maybe they'll call you. But
when you work on these union shows with these union members, learn as much as you can learn, study them, study what they're doing. And a lot of times when you study what they're doing, you either learn what to do or what not to do. Not just that, when you get in there, study that call sheet. Look at that call sheet from top to bottom on both sides. Look at the names of the director, the producers. Look at the call sheet to see exactly what it says and exactly what it means, because the call sheet is literally your Bible. It gives you every form of direction that you'll ever need. Where you go to, you know, where you need to go to get to work. It tells you what time you need to start work. It tells you what time lunch is going to be. It tells you what time, I mean, it tells you where you need to park your car. It tells you where the actual set is located. It tells you the actors that are coming in that day. It tells you who the background actors or the extras are that are coming in that day. It tells you how many of them are going to be there. It gives you little notes to tell you what's required from certain departments and certain scenes on that particular day. It tells you everything. It gives you the names of people who are working in each and every department, okay? It tells you everything. It's literally your Bible. When you get one, when you get on set, you keep it. You save it. If you're trying to get into the union, this is part of what you're going to need to prove that you worked. The call sheet and a check stub.
Exactly. And then also, I mean, you know, working on union projects and remembering the people. But even if you're on a non-union project, like she mentioned earlier, there are a lot of union members who often work on non-union projects. And, you know, just go get on the job and do your best job. Try to know what you do and what you're trying to do. Keep in touch with past work contacts. You know, when you're in the union, you go to the union meeting and different union events. Introduce yourself to people. Because if you're new and no one knows you, the only way they're going to know you is if you introduce yourself to them. I've seen a lot within the last few years of a lot of people moving to Atlanta or who are already in Atlanta and just new to the union, emailing all the people on the union roster, introducing themselves. Also, when you see that a job or know that a job is coming, send your resume to the production office. I'm talking union workers, okay? Send your resume to the production office. Have them send attention to whoever the makeup department head is, or whoever the, you know, if it's don't have a department head, it's just the key, send it to the key. But this is typical stuff. This is what you normally do when you look for any kind of makeup job. You network, send out your resume. You have a website showcasing your work, a reel maybe possibly, and your portfolio of work, and business cards. If you're, you know, new to the union, you get the opportunity to day play, you know, just working when they need additional help. Introduce yourself to the artists that are there and do your best work. Because most of the time what's going to happen, if you're new, you come on set, no one knows you. You know, you introduce yourself, you do great work, you don't start trouble, you're not all over the place, you do what you're told. Most people are going to, you know, if they like you, they're going to want you to come back. And pretty much that's how it goes.
And another thing, when you were just talking about sending your resume, you know, to the production office, if you know that, let's just say a television show, for instance, if you know that, let's say this is the third season of this particular television show, and you know that one particular person was the head of the makeup department, the, you know, first two seasons, and you don't know whether or not they're going back or not, but, you know, you could probably just assume that they are the department head for the show, don't send in your resume to be department head. Don't, matter of fact, don't even send in your resume. People can get to the point where they're so desperate that, and I've seen it happen it could have been a situation, I know of a situation where there was a department head on the show, and the person, there was somebody who was working as her key, and they worked the first season of the show. By the second season, the person who was the key decides to send her resume in to the production as department head. She wanted to get the department head position. Well, it doesn't work like that sometimes. When a production is happy with the department head and actors are happy with the department head, they keep the same department head. If they decide to get rid of that department head, then trust me, more than likely, if they like you, if you were the key and they actually liked you, they would call you to see if you want to be the department head. If you haven't heard from them about being the department head, please trust and believe they're keeping the person that was the original department head or either hired somebody else totally different.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
There are tons of people who do that, and that's just not right. You're not going to get ahead by trying to step over somebody else. When it's your turn, it's your turn.
It's true.
Oh, sure.
And then there's what 798 calls an availability list. And if you're new to the union, go to the 798 website, and you go to the member section and you check off that you are available. If you're actually working on a show, you know, check off that you're not available. But when it shows that you're available, when someone needs extra help, what we should be doing is looking at that union roster and looking at that website to see who's available and who's not available. And then that's how we call union members first. Things I wanted to say to those who are in the union and new to the union, don't get discouraged if you are not working right away. When people don't know you, they don't know you. And that means they don't know you because they don't know of you. But then also it means they know of you, but they don't know you personally. And there are a lot of people who are just not willing to take a chance on people they know. They would rather call somebody that they do know, that they're comfortable with. But that's not everybody. That you're not working. 9 times out of 10, you're not going to be working in the beginning. Especially when you're in a town that has a lot of union workers. So I say that because there are a lot of people who are moving from other states. They're coming to Atlanta because, you know, the incentive in their state, you know, is no longer in existence and they need to work, you know. But don't get upset when you come, because a lot of people moving to Atlanta trying to work, you know. And sometimes when you know somebody in, say, for instance, I'll use Atlanta as an example. If you're coming from another state and you're already in the union, but you're coming from another state to work, and if you know somebody, don't assume that somebody is going to call you for work all the time. A lot of times people have teams of people that they like to work with. A lot of times, sometimes producers see a great group of people working together and it works. They like that. Sometimes they may even request, department, make sure you bring back this person or that person. So, and I say that because I see a lot of people who get discouraged because they're not working. So sometimes you can't always go with the person that you know in the town that's working, that you know. Sometimes you have to, like we just said, get out there, talk to other people, network, send emails out, say, hey, I'm new in town. I'm a makeup artist or I'm a hairstylist. I'm in the local 798 or whatever local it is. And, you know, if you need some extra help, I'm your girl. Here's my resume. Here's the link to my website. You know, email with all your information. You're not calling them. You're just emailing them and letting them know, hey, I'm in town. I think that works. So you just have to just be mindful of that. Again, and just know that the union, once you get in, the union is not doing this work for you. This is something that you do for yourself. They are going to only negotiate those contracts. They're going to make sure that you're treated fairly on set and that the production is going by what that contract says. If you have any issues or problems, of course, you call the union. And then there's always on set.
A representative? Oh, steward, shop steward.
A steward, yes, thank you. There's always a shop steward on set. Now, the shop steward may not come from IOC, the Herring Union local, but they may be from, 9 times out of 10, they're from the local that's in that particular town, the local that represents, you know, like the grips and like the star.
You mean it may not come from the hair and makeup union?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You said it may not come from the hair and union.
Oh. But we're all IOC.
Right.
And that's one thing, and I say that like that because we're all brothers and sisters, and we team, you know, and each, you know, there's individual departments, but we're all part of the same team, and so I say that just to say, you know, when we're in the union together, we work as team players. And like my sister was saying earlier, you know, when you talk about the department head tells you to do something, that's what you do. And I think that's another show because...
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, we've just seen so many things where people are just all over the place. And it's out of order, and it makes for a bad working experience. But that's a whole nother show.
Yeah. The one thing that I wanted to mention very quickly before we wrap it up is, you know, for film and TV, I always stress this, but I can't stress it enough. You know, the makeup and the hair that you're doing for film and television is all about creating characters. And if that character is an everyday woman with three kids, you know, a soccer mom, she doesn't have to have, you know, an Instagram beat. And I don't want to say it that way to make it seem like there's something wrong with the makeup on Instagram. No, I don't. I don't mean it that way. But you have so many people, you know, you see them on these independent movies or you see them, you know, everywhere, anywhere, you know. It doesn't matter whether you're doing film or TV. It doesn't matter whether you're doing music videos. It doesn't matter whether you're doing headshots for a photographer. Everybody nowadays wants to kill people with tons and tons of makeup, tons of highlighting and contouring, and tons of powder. That all worked when we were shooting on film. But HD is a brand new and different beast, and it's constantly changing each and every day. We have to learn to adjust. We have to learn to change our hand and be able to adjust to what's actually required in film and TV. You may do that Instagram beat, and it may look like an Instagram beat in the mirror. But once that actor or client gets the set, it doesn't need to look like that. Mm-hmm. So just learn the difference is all I'm trying to stress. Learn the difference, because film and TV, it's all about building characters. Again, if it's a soccer mom, then she's got to look like a soccer mom, like somebody who doesn't have time to beat her face, somebody who doesn't have time for a bunch of highlighting and contouring. You know, maybe she has time for a little powder and a little lipstick. Then right. you have to be able to do that. You can highlight, you can contour, you can do all of that. But she's got to look like a soccer mom at the end of the day when she gets on camera.
Right.
You know, If it's an actress who's portraying an actress on the red carpet, then yes, she should look like she's on the red carpet. But she still needs to be appropriate for film and TV. You get what I'm saying? She's got to be appropriate for film and TV and HD camera, but you can give her a look that's a red carpet look. It's all about
right.
characters. You know, if somebody's got to be a zombie, then you make them up as a zombie. You know what I'm saying? It's all about character. So it's not all about pretty makeup all the time. And you're finding so much of that. You're finding so much of that with not just makeup artists, but with the actors themselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who's wanting that, like I always call it, not necessarily Instagram, but I always call it that housewife,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, they always want that look. I mean, what the heck is it with this highlighting and contouring? That's nothing new. People act like highlighting and contouring is something that's so brand new, and it's not. It's a simple part of a corrective makeup that's been done for years. People just need to learn how to do it correctly.
Exactly. And I'm going to get into that a little more when I do the Periscope on what makeup artists and hairstylists need to know how to do the work that they need to know how to do when they're in the union.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to briefly mention this really quickly because we talked about theater earlier,
mm-hmm.
and I forgot how it was referred to. Let me see. Let me go back to my notes really quickly. They were referring to...
Was it proper theater? Did it say proper theater or...?
Legitimate theater.
Legitimate.
Okay. But they talked about commercial/legitimate theater.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm talking about live theatrical theater, commercial theater versus nonprofit theater, resident/regional theater. And I just wanted to read a little bit from everything really quickly, just for those people who are interested in theater and may be trying to get theater work to qualify for the union. Okay, so live theatrical theater basically is referring to referring to live. Hold on. Okay, let me read it exactly how it is because I'm messing myself up. In its literal definition, live referring to the time of occurrence and theatrical referring to acting or actors for the theater. Together, they describe a performance viewed by an audience in real time at a physical venue, okay? Many may refer to this as Broadway, so there are a variety of live theatrical venues within the jurisdiction of Local 798 where a performance may take place at or in a non-typical theater space. Yet the majority of the live theatrical work will take place in a traditional theater setting. So then you ask, what is Broadway? Broadway defines only theaters in Midtown Manhattan that seat 500 or more. So basically, if there's a theater in Midtown Manhattan that 100, maybe those are the theaters that are off-Broadway.
Right.
Okay, so only productions in these theaters are eligible for Tony Awards. Okay. So it says the number of Broadway houses varies as theaters are built or remodeled or turned to other uses. There are 40 Broadway theaters, okay, and then they go on to talk about who owns them all. So that just kind of defines that for people. Then what is resident versus regional theater? Most commonly referred to as regional theater, a resident or regional theater in the U.S. is a professional or semi-professional theater company that produces its own season and most often live outside of the The regional theater movement began in the early part of the 20th century by theater artists learning that not enough emphasis was being put on the expression of individualism and social issues through the dramatic art. The belief that theater should be about artistry and not about commerce drove this movement out of New York City and into the regions, altering the faces of the American stage, allowing for new work and new audiences. But such theater companies reside on the island of Manhattan, Lincoln Central Theater, Manhattan Theater Club, Roundabout Theater Company, and Theater for a New Audience. These theater companies are among 75 others across the U.S. that are members of the League of Resident Theaters. All right. First, nonprofit theater. Professional theater is divided into two categories, professional commercial theater and professional nonprofit theater. Commercial theater, typically formed as a partnership or company to produce one play, musical only, and then disband. A production is often planned as an open-ended run, playing for as long as ticket sales support it. So this may be more about what you were speaking of when you said Tyler Perry does plays.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Producers do not necessarily own and operate the theater where the show is playing. Box office
right.
results determine. Right. Box office results determine if a show runs. Profits for investors are taxable. Losses are deducted for the most part. Okay. So that's where his plays. You often hear people call it like Chitlin Circuit.
Right.
Plays. That falls under the commercial theater. Okay. And then you have your not-for-profit theater, which usually produces a slate of plays, musicals each season. The production is rarely planned as an open-ended run. Not-for-profit theaters generally have closed, limited runs, and established in the state. But I wanted to read this really quickly, and that is live theatrical contracts. In general, a union contract is a collective bargaining agreement, a CBA, between the employer and the employee, a local 798 member, that states the terms and conditions under which the employee is engaged for work. Cover items such as minimum or scale rates, hourly rates, overtime rates, minimum call times, work calls, et cetera, et cetera. The following employers have collective bargaining agreements with Local 798. And so I want to say this because these aren't all New York City theaters.
Right.
Again, the following employers have collective bargaining agreements with Local 798. For those of you who are in these areas working on plays in these theaters, this may qualify for your union's work. The American Ballet Theater, the Bob Carr Theater in Orlando, Florida, the Broadway League, Dr. Phillips Center for the Performing Arts in Orlando, Florida, Disney Theatrical, Fox Theater in Atlanta, Georgia, the Hippodrome Theater in Baltimore, Maryland, the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C., the Lincoln Center Theater, the Manhattan Theater Club, the Metropolitan Opera, the National Theater in Washington, D.C., the New York City Opera, the Roundabout Theater, and the Wolf Trap Foundation for the Performing Arts in Vienna, Virginia. Okay. So many of the above live theatrical contracts uses the Broadway League, which is a multi-employer, multi-year agreement as a template. So I just wanted to read all of that because I know we mentioned commercial legitimate theater. And so I just wanted to address what was under the contract. And those theater houses that I just read are under the collective bargaining agreement with the union. And then you have those commercial theaters, not-for-profit theaters, your resident and regional theaters where there's work as well. Okay? So if you're working on a theater like a Tyler Perry play, that work could possibly be submitted as long as you're getting paid, like we mentioned earlier, and the union has a right to say, yes, we would accept this, or no, we will not. But it doesn't hurt. Like I said, whether the union accepts it or not, at least it's on your resume, and it just makes your resume look a little bit more attractive for those theater jobs that they will accept. So it's a win-win situation, if you ask me, whether it qualifies for the union or not. Work helps build a resume, point blank. And that's it. And so I'll get a little more in detail about some other things. I want to talk a lot about, on Periscope, about what you need to know what you need to know once you're in the union. And I say when I say this, I'm saying this because I would rather you start preparing yourself. Don't wait to get into the union to decide, okay, I'm going to have to learn how to do this. I'm going to have to learn how to do that. Learn it before you get in the union, as much of it as you possibly can.
Or at least get a basic working knowledge, you know?
Well, yeah, and I'm saying that because there are a lot of people who go to makeup schools that program offers beauty makeup and all the other stuff. So they're good, you know? But then there are some who are self-taught. There are some who go to aesthetic school, and they're not taught any of this in the stuff. So I'm just going to basically talk about the makeup and hair. I'm just going to mention it. It's going to be general. I'm not a hairstylist, so I'm not going to go into detail. But for those who are in makeup, I'm going to mention everything, but then we can talk a little bit in detail about what you need to do and know as well. So look for that sometime this week, early in the week, a Periscope from me, Janice, about what you need to know as a makeup artist and a hairstylist for union work. Okay? So, again, this is very general. I hope it helped some of you out there who just didn't know anything at all about what to do, where to go. Again, you can always go to, or call, rather, and find out. Again, I said if you're going to call the unions, I think that one of the best things to know is to find out what the requirements are, how much you have to pay once you get in, and then when they're accepting applications, because some of them may not accept all year round. Just double check that.
Let me say this really quickly before we go. I know we're speaking of Periscope, and this is Denise speaking. I have a Periscope that I did earlier on a ball cap application. That's something that you will have to know getting into the union. Now that they don't test you anymore, you are not required to do that, but it's nice to, let me take that back, because I think now 798 in New York asks that you send in pictures of certain things, and a ball cap may be one of them. So learning a ball cap and how to lay hair on the face, like how to lay on a beard, mustache, things like that, all of that is stuff that we'll talk about on, you'll talk about on your scope, but that's some of the things. But I'm mentioning my scope because I did do the one on ball cap application. And this goes back to, creating characters for film and TV. You know, I wasn't able to really see the comments of the people who were watching today. I had somebody else doing the scope while I was working. But, you know, some people said, oh, the guy looks like Cuba Gooding Jr. And so when I looked at the guy, I'm thinking, he can't possibly look like Cuba, maybe his brother Omar. But the thing was, it was about a character. This particular independent film that I was working on is full of comedians. It's a comedy. Everything is funny in this movie. So this particular actor was playing two different characters. He's playing an Uber driver, just as himself, and then he's playing a ship leader, a guy who's working in a cupcake place, cupcake bakery, and he's the shift leader. And so he himself wanted, of course, to look different. He kind of wanted to have that whole George Jefferson look. You know, the hair guy did his interpretation of that look. But regardless of what it looked like, because people were asking, there was one question about, are you going to put any I think they said hair. I can't remember if they phrased it as hair highlights or something, you know, on the cap just to give it some dimension or whatever. Well, you know, this is the thing. It was not supposed to be perfect. It was supposed to be funny. And not just funny, but crazy looking funny. So that's kind of what it ended up being. And so, I mean, I get people's questions about, you know, are you going to do this to make it look like that and all this kind of stuff, but it's supposed to look crazy. It wasn't supposed to look, because this guy is an idiot, and so he's supposed to look like an idiot practically, you know. And so I think we accomplished that much. And you know, actually shooting the scene today, it was absolutely hilarious because you could see through the hair to his scalp, you know what I mean? And for somebody like that who's trying to hold on to what little bit of hair he has left, that's kind of how it would actually look. But, again, it's all about creating characters, not creating, you know, the perfect look that you would necessarily want. It's about creating a character. And if the director gives you direction, and that's another thing, when the director gives you direction to do something, if it's by the director's request, then so be it. It doesn't have to be, you know, yeah. I'm doing a, you know,
at
whatever.
At that point, you lose creative control.
Yeah, you lose creative control, and you just do what the director asks you to do. But you can still be creative in your own way, you know. Mm-hmm. Certainly, the look I was going for, but hey.
Keyword control.
Right.
You can be creative, but you don't have control of it.
But you don't have control. But anyway, there is that ball cap application out there for a little while longer at Denise Tunnell on Periscope. It's hilarious. But again, just keep in mind, a film and TV is a different beast altogether. So if being in the union is what you want and film and TV is what you really want, then study that, you know. Watch television, watch movies. Mm-hmm. Look at the characters on television and in movies.
And don't always get caught up, because I hear people say this, and sometimes I have to catch myself when I say it. But when you look at, if you're a makeup artist or a hairstylist, when you look, I'll just stick with makeup, because that's what I do. But in a movie or a television show and you see something and it's like, why didn't they do this? Or why did they put that on her? Before you get on social media being vocal, know the story behind it. Because sometimes it is a bad decision, and sometimes it's a decision that the director wants. Or a collaboration, mm-hmm. something that the director and the actor, you know, were going for, or something like that. So,
right.
Before you get on social media talking a bit or what makeup artists did or didn't do, kind of know a little something beforehand. And Again, that's another conversation too, but we'll leave it alone. We'll leave that alone. So, again, follow me on Periscope this week. I will be scoping a little bit more about the union and talking about what you need to know. Again, Erica Carr is presenting a panel of artists coming. They're going to really get into some detail. But tonight is about those who just need to know the basics. How do I get in? That's what you need to focus on, how you get in, and doing the work to get there.
Absolutely.
So anyway, Erica's class, again, is on the 25th. That's correct, from 5 to 8 p.m., and you can go to her website to find out more. The investment is $95. Again, I want to thank you guys for tuning in tonight, and why don't you tell them how they can follow us on social media.
You can follow us on my sister's favorite Facebook. We are Beauty Talk Online, Beauty Talk Online Radio. You can follow us on Twitter, which is my favorite. We are Beauty_Talk. And then on Instagram, we're Beauty_Talk_Media.
All right. So we will speak to you guys again on this show next Sunday night. No, hold it. Wait. Hold it. I forgot. We're not sure if we're going to be talking to you guys next Sunday night. If that's still up in the air, because we will be in Pasadena for IMAX. We may do a show from IMAX, or we may not do a show. We will let
Maybe we'll just upload a show.
Yeah, we'll let you know for sure. But follow us on social media, because we'll be making announcements on Facebook, Twitter, and all that. So.
Yeah, it's simply because of the time difference.
The time difference will be a little rough trying to do a show. But if not, so if we don't talk to you on the 17th here on Blog Talk Radio, we will be back on the 24th. Okay?
And then also, we're going to start our monthly tweet chats, or you can either go to tweetchat.com to follow it, or you can actually just follow the hashtag via Twitter. And we're going to be doing tweet chats like every second Saturday of the month. We missed doing it last week because of work, so we will definitely try to do something this week, but it won't be on Saturday because of IMAX. So we'll probably try to get it done maybe by Thursday. And then starting in February, we're going to go back to every second Saturday of the month doing a tweet chat.
All right. So we have lots of great artists that we'll be chatting with, a lot of great topics. So make sure you follow us, and we always use the hashtag #PoundBeautyTalk, #PoundBeautyLounge, so you can hear more about it as the week comes and goes. Okay? So again, we thank you for your continued support. We hope we've helped somebody out there who's trying to get into the union. A big shout out to Claire Aluka in London, who's always supporting us. Thank you, Claire, for your continued support. Thanks again, everybody, for tuning in. If you have any questions, you can always get us up.
Unless
on
you
want to
tell
media.
Us who we have coming up the following week.
Oh, that's right. So, 17th again is up in the air. On the 31st, not the following week, but on the 31st, we have Donna Mee coming up.
Okay.
And it's been a long time since we spoke to Donna, but she's got a lot of new things going on, and we want her to come back and share what she has. Donna is big on education, and she's a good one to learn from. When trying to get those looks and some of those characters we talked about, even if it's just through straight makeup. Donna is a great educator. A lot of great educators out there. Marietta Carter Narcisse, who's a film person herself. She's a good one. She does a lot of teaching all over the world. She's always at the Makeup Forever Academy in Paris, and then she's always down in Florida. And what's the name of the school? I always forget the name of the school. Florida, where Marietta sometimes teaches.
Gosh, I do too.
Anyway.
It's in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, it's in Fort Lauderdale. I just can't think of the name. So anyway, take advantage of all the education that's out there, especially if it's from, I always like to go with the experienced and experienced artists out there who are teaching, those who have a resume of their own. And there are a lot of schools out there. So just, you know, choose wisely is all I can say. Choose wisely, but never stop learning. Is what I say.
Right.
Never stop learning. Always prepare yourself. So again, thank you guys for tuning in. Thanks for another wonderful show. Again, thank you guys who will be listening via the playback. Thank you for your continued support. Follow us on social media, and we will chat with you guys really soon. Okay. So have a wonderful night. And have a beautiful and blessed week. Good night, everybody.
Good night.